Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thank you for listening. Two guests this week. We kick things off with WWE superstar Becky Lynch, one of the more popular wrestlers out there. She was outstanding, talking about her return to the ring after having a baby, what it's like being married to a fellow WWE superstar, big match at Survivor Series, and you never know with wrestling, but according to Becky Lynch, she really does not like her opponent for Survivor Series. Charlotte Flair had some harsh things to say about her. So if you're a wrestling fan, you'll be into that. Following Becky Lynch, we have Kevin Clark from The Ringer, SI Media Podcast regular, to talk about a bunch of NFL stories, Aaron Rodgers, Bill Belichick, the Chiefs, Manning cast, a lot of NFL topics with Kevin Clark after Becky Lynch. And then Train of Thoughts with Sal Licata. If you follow me on Instagram, you'll get the backstory on a joke that was made over the weekend on my Instagram with Sal. And then we talked about some other things, the Jokic play and the suspension, and this week's Curb Your Enthusiasm, a couple of other topics in Train of Thoughts. So that's the show. Before we get to it, last week, Al Michaels was on this podcast. So if you did not listen to that, check that out. Al was great. Feedback has been tremendous. A lot of feedback on that pod. Everyone really enjoyed the conversation with Al, so check that out. Chris Long 2 weeks ago, Steve Levy, Jeff Garland 3 weeks ago, all in the archives. Subscribe to the SI Media Podcast, and if you could give us a review on Apple, that helps. All right, first up, Becky Lynch, followed by Kevin Clark, followed by Train of Thoughts on this episode of the SI Media Podcast. All right, joining me now, very excited, first time on the SI Media Podcast, one of the most popular figures in the WWE, the man, Becky Lynch. Becky, thank you for coming on the SI Media Podcast. How are you?
Oh, pleasure. I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And I know this is a busy time for the WWE with one of the signature events, Survivor Series, coming up on Sunday, November 21st on Peacock. You have a match against Charlotte Flair, which we'll get into. But wanted to get into some other things first, because you just recently came back at SummerSlam in August after having a baby. And, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about it. You know, you think, okay, woman, athlete, entertainer, having a baby. We think, you know, it happens all the time. Not then I'm thinking, like, this is not something we see a ton in the WWE, where someone goes off, has the baby, comes back. So how has it been coming back from all that for you and the whole experience?
Yeah, so it's not something you see a bunch, because we have a crazy lifestyle, man. We're on the road 52 weeks a year, and so that's not usually the most conducive life to be raising a family when both of you are doing it. Luckily, we are we're in a great spot that we're able to bring her everywhere with us. And we have help, and it's just makes a world of a difference, because I wouldn't be able to leave her, man. She's just the best. She is the best. God bless her. We bring her everywhere, and she's a trooper. And we're probably a little bit insane, you know. She's already been to the UK twice. She's been to Saudi Arabia. And she takes it all in her stride, and she's just a little angel. So it's very fulfilling. It's very fulfilling being able to balance the two. You know, it's all the loves of my life in one space. You know, I've got my husband, I've got my baby, and I've got the thing that I love to do more than anything. So I'm very blessed, very privileged that I'm able to do this.
It's so funny you said that, because I have a niece, a 16-year-old niece, Lena, who's a huge Becky Lynch fan. And I told her I was interviewing you. I will. Thank you. I told her I was interviewing her, and I'm like, you have any questions? And she said, ask her if she's in the ring wrestling, if Seth is watching the baby backstage, and if Seth is wrestling. And I said, I'm sure they have some help, but I'll ask the question anyway. So how is it working with a baby backstage at Raw and the tapings and the live events?
We do have help. But but there's been some weeks when we didn't, and so sometimes it is like that, where we're pulling double duty. But like I said, she's great, and I think she cheers up everybody in the locker room too. You know, she walks around just smiling at everybody, waving, and so oftentimes it is a little pass back and forth.
That's funny. So before you left and went on hiatus and had your baby, I mean, you. there are few times, you know, in WWE history where a superstar has that level of fame that gets kind of insane with the fans. I mean, we've seen it with The Rock. We've seen it with, you know, Daniel Bryan during the Yes Movement. And you had that. You were, you know, there's red hot and then there's white hot. You were white hot. What was that whole experience like when that just, because it sort of evolved. It's always kind of organic, unplanned. It does seem like when it happens, you transformed into the man. What was that whole experience like when you had that white hot period there?
Yeah, it was great, but at the same time, it wasn't anything different. If that makes any sense, and I'll try to explain what I mean. In terms of, because this moves so quickly and you're always just working, and because you're done with, say, SummerSlam and you're on to Extreme Rules, and you're done with WrestleMania, but you have to get up and do media the next morning, and then you have to do Raw that night, and then, you know, and then you're on to making towns, and then you've got tours. And so I guess you never really, or at least I never really, sat back and thought about, oh, I'm a Daiso great, or look at how wonderful this is all going. It was cool and I knew that it was happening, but at the same time, you're always like, okay, but what else can I do? How can I make this? How can I keep this rolling? How can I make this better? What's the next story? What's the next thing? What's the next count? How do I make this all work? And so I don't think you're ever really sitting back going, oh, that's it. I've made it. I'm done. I'm good now. Because we're constantly, there's always content and there's always people tuning in and looking for the next thing. And we're always looking for the next thing and the next big thing. And it's so easy to be on top one day and down at the bottom the next, and you never want to let that happen. So you're always thinking, always grinding, always working.
And then when you did have to leave, I mean, I hate to even use the word bittersweet, because obviously what you went off to do is going to be the most important thing you ever do in your life. But it is that work-career balance where your work was thriving in this unbelievable way, and then you have to take this break. Well, let me ask you this first. So tell me about when you had to leave for a little bit, what that was like. And when you left, did you think you'd be back? Like, I feel like you're back quickly. Maybe I'm reading it wrong, but did you think you'd be back this quickly? Did you think 100% I'd be back? What was the plan when you did leave?
So there was always that little doubt, you know, and not because I didn't want to come back, but that doubt of, I don't know what I'm going to be like as a mother. You know, I don't know what that feeling is. I don't know what that attachment is. And so you can't ever make any guarantees in life in general. And so when you essentially, death to single Becky, what is mom Becky like? How am I going to be? What are my priorities going to be? But so much of me is wrapped up in wrestling, and it is a little part of me. It's part of my soul, you know. It sets me on fire, and so most of me felt like, of course, I'm going to come back. But you know, there was that little bit of unknown of what I'm going to want to do, how I'm going to feel, and maybe I'll be a different person. I don't know how this is going to affect me. So realistically, I kept all options open. But after about 2 months, I was like, okay, I gotta get going, I gotta move. And so I thought I was gonna be back actually a lot sooner, and I was ready to come back sooner. But you know, everything worked out the way it did.
And then of course you come back at SummerSlam in August. The place goes absolutely apeshit when you return. But then it seems like the majority of fans were not happy with what happened. Was that? Well, let me ask you this. First, tell me what that was like when you first came through the curtain at SummerSlam, when you came back.
Oh, it was amazing. Because, you know, like, I wasn't posting very much. I wasn't, you know, I tried to stay as much out of the spotlight as I could. I denied a lot of opportunities because, honestly, I just wanted that pop, you know.
You got so, it.
But there's also that doubt, yeah. You know, of, well, but what if they forget about me? You know, what if we have a whole new set of fans when I go out there and they're like, who's this? You know, but that didn't happen. So
now, so then you go in, you beat Bianca Belair in 26 seconds, which, I mean, this is going to go off on a little bit tangent, but one of the things you've always done, which has made Becky Lynch, the character and the person, so great is you use social media in a way that few others do. And I love that you, you know, so the majority of fans seemed very irate that you beat her in 26 seconds. So I love now in your Twitter bio, you have the line, beat her, beat your favorite in 26 seconds. Brilliant, brilliant use of your Twitter bio there. When did you first realize everyone was thrilled that you were back, but they're not happy with how this is going? Was it after or was it during? When did that all come down for you?
No. So that was the plan, right? Was that it's going to be maybe it's going to be hard to bring back a new mother, and they wanted me in this heel role. So somebody who was loved by the fans, somebody who was made by the fans. And how do you make them hate her? Well, you make them rob somebody who is undeniably awesome. And so it's one thing if we had a knockout dragout match where we both look good, but it's another thing to, you know, catch somebody off guard and they weren't ready and they're a bit disorientated and they didn't expect it. And so so I guess the plan was this is the best way to, one, make them not like me, or to start that process, and two, to make them feel like Bianca was robbed. We want Bianca to win now. We want her to get her title back. And so sometimes you got to play the long game with that, because undoubtedly we've got something incredible in Bianca Belair.
Yeah. When did you make that your Twitter bio, though? Because that's pretty brilliant. Like right
pretty soon after?
After,
I think. Yeah. Pretty soon after, yeah.
That was good. It seems like whenever, I mean, I've had a ton of WWE superstars on the podcast, and I will often ask, do you prefer being a heel or a face? And everyone always seems to say heel. Do you have a preference?
God, I feel like I'm just so in the beginning stages, right? And so I really like wrestling as a heel. I feel like I can do that really well because I'll bump around like a crazy person, you know, and I'm not scared to look like an idiot. And but I think when it comes to my promo process, a lot of the time being a baby face is better because I know this is what I feel so strongly about, and this is the truth, and this is what I feel is right. And so when you're a heel, you also have to tell the truth, but in a different way, because everyone's the hero of their own story. Everyone's the hero of their own story. So it's all just a process. It's all just a process, and I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the ride. I'm figuring out a new role, and I'm trying to be great at it.
I saw a great video of you. I think it was from last week. You guys were in England, and you took the mic like in the middle of the match and said, you know, you thought you were going to Ireland, and you're so disappointed because obviously this place isn't as good. I mean, that's got to be such fun stuff to do as the heel.
Oh, such fun. Yeah. The routing people, they got it all wrong. They messed it up the whole tour. I thought I was going one place. I was going another place. It was all very disappointing.
Yeah. So now you come back, and now we've got Survivor Series on Sunday, November 21st, 8 p.m., obviously on Peacock, where the WWE Network is. And you'll be facing Charlotte Flair in that match, which everyone is looking forward to. Now, there were reports, you know, with WWE, you always have to, figure out what's true, not true. But there were all these reports that there was, quote unquote, real life heat and a backstage issue after SmackDown recently, where you were supposed to trade belts because you went from SmackDown to Raw. She went from Raw to SmackDown and she dropped the belt. I'm going to assume those are true. If they're not, you can tell me they're not. But assuming they're true, will you guys play into that at all leading up to this match, or because it was a thing, you want to leave it alone? What, give me some juice on what happened backstage.
I don't know, man. We don't talk anymore. We don't talk. So all I'll say is the locker room needs a hero sometimes, and sometimes somebody's got to be a hero, and I'm all right being that hero. That's what I'll say on that matter.
Okay. So if you do have quote unquote real life heat with someone or issues with someone, you know, away from the ring, and then you do have to have a match, does that make things more difficult?
Oh, 100%, 100% more difficult. Yeah. And that was, and that's the thing, when you've got two people that are wanting to work together to make magic, then you make magic. And sometimes when there's hostility, when you can't trust the person, then you never know what's going to happen. And you always have to be on guard, and you have to, it's like a game of chess. You have to be thinking two steps, three steps, four steps ahead. What are they going to do? How am I going to handle it? If they do this, if they do that, if whatever. So this business is built on trust. It's built on working together. And that's the art of it. That's the beauty of it. If I make you look good, you make me look good. This is what it is. It's an art. It is a beautiful art. It is an art that I love more than anything. And if people don't know how to make that art, then it becomes difficult. It becomes tricky. And you never really get the full potential. But there's intrigue there too, you know, because we never know, what was this meant to happen? Was that not meant to happen? What's going to go down? So there's interest in both ways. One way, it's the beautiful, pure art of pro wrestling. The other way, it's a bit of a shit show. So we'll see what happens.
So do you trust Charlotte Flair?
No.
Are things difficult right now with Charlotte Flair?
Yes.
Okay. Were you guys friends and no longer friends, or were you never friends?
Oh, we used to be the best friends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That sounds, yeah. It, you know, it's funny, just talking about this, you guys were friends, not friends. You know, we've touched on, obviously, you're married to Seth Rollins. Was there any trepidation about getting married to a coworker? Because it has nothing to do with wrestling. I mean, I think no matter what you do, and this leads into something where I want to read something Seth said about you, but you know, it's a lot of time to spend together. So I'm just wondering if there was ever like...
There was absolutely no trepidation about getting married. There was trepidation before we even got together.
That's what
I don't know about this. We work together and we're friends. But I think as soon as we were together, that was, oh, okay, we're going to spend the rest of our lives together without even talking about it. It was, oh, this is my person. And, the great thing is there's no amount of time where I'm like, oh, I'm sick of this person. It's just great. It's so easy. It makes life better getting to travel with him, getting to experience everything, getting to talk shop, share our problems. It makes life better. Now seeing him as a dad and a dad on the road and balancing it all, it's tremendous.
Do you guys ever have to say to each other like, okay, let's do like 1 hour where we don't talk about wrestling, or one day where we don't talk about wrestling?
No. I mean, because we both love it. We both love talking about it. So it's not really a chore. I think and we've just got so many other things to talk about that I don't think we ever have to be like, let's not talk about this or let's talk about this. We just talk, and it's easy.
Gotcha. So I'm a big Seth Rollins fan. I've interviewed him. He's been on this podcast two or three times, and he's always great. And one thing he does, which shocks me, is like he will respond if I message him on Instagram. It's like, why is he responding to me? I'm a nobody. But it's funny that he responds, because I love the drip. You guys this week really outdid yourself. We'll get into that, because this week was just ridiculous. And I mean that in a good way. But I had Seth. I interviewed Seth at the beginning of the pandemic. It was in March or April of 2020. And I asked him, this is an interesting time for couples who probably aren't used to spending this much time together. You and Becky travel together, so you already spend a lot of time together, but this is another level. What are your thoughts on that? So I want to read you his response so you can maybe give him a nice shout out too. He said, I'm going to get a little sappy on you here. She's my best friend in the world. So us having to spend all this time together is great. I have no problem with it. We like the same things and do the same stuff, and we're really understanding of each other's space, so we don't get into arguments or fights. And I know that's a ridiculous sounding thing, but it hasn't been a problem at all. It's been nice to have downtime with her and not have to work, 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 go, go, go all the time. Isn't that a nice thing that he said to me?
Oh, he's the best. But it's true. You know, we've never for a single second had that issue. And, yeah, it's great. I feel just so lucky that I get to do everything with him.
Because I mean, I don't know if people can remember back then, but like when that first when the pandemic first started in, you know, February, March, April, and everyone was just trapped inside, it was like, yeah. Oh my, like that was intense.
Remember when we thought it was going to be 3 weeks and we were like, right. 3 weeks of this, what?
Right.
Here we are.
Yeah. Still. I was actually happy when I thought it was going to be 3 weeks because I worked in Manhattan and live on Long Island. So I'm like, 3 weeks and no commuting. This will be a nice break and then we'll go back and everything will be fine. And here I am still home. So
yeah,
he did tell me in that interview he was going to try during quarantine to get you to watch Game of Thrones. Did you ever watch it?
Oh, yes, we did. Okay. And I think we watched it. We watched it in something stupid like 2 or 3 weeks.
Ooh, I think it was two weeks. Yeah.
I think it was 2 weeks. Yeah, but we had nothing else to do, you know? And we thought this was gonna last forever. So we were like, right. Well, you might as well sit on our couch and watch Game of Thrones. Holy moly. Yeah. I was ashamed of myself that I hadn't watched it. And like I think everyone was saying like, the first episode moved slow. And I was like, what is wrong with you? And then sorry, now we're getting into Game of Thrones.
No, that's fine.
But the last season, everybody bitching about it. When you watch it, when you have no expectations of what's going on, if you don't sit there and you've got months to hypothesize what should happen, what will happen, it all makes sense. And it's a great ending. That's my personal opinion. From somebody who knew nothing, somebody who didn't have time to think about it, I thought it was great. I thought the whole thing was just great.
I love how fired up about it you are. Is there a show that's on now that you're fired up about? Is there anything current that gets you fired up? Like what's...
We just finished Impeachment.
Oh, that how is that?
Great.
Oh, I wanted to watch it. Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic. Fantastic acting. Yeah. Just fascinating story.
Edie Falco who plays Hillary Clinton in that?
Yes. Yeah.
That's going to be... Yeah. That's... Because she's great.
The acting in it is Clive Owen as Clinton is fantastic.
All right, speaking of acting, we'll try to get the train back on the track here with you and Seth with the outfits.
Yeah,
now, Seth obviously started with the drip became part of his character. Which where are these clothes coming from? How long is it taking to get these outfits together? I need some information on the drip. I don't mean to interrupt. I just want to say where was it when you came out with the big red fur coat? Because that was tremendous.
That was in Madison Square Garden.
That's what it was. Right.
Yeah.
That was a luck.
And that was all thanks to my friend Troy, man. King Troy, he's the best. Follow him on Instagram. He's incredible. And he does Kobe's and my stuff. And sometimes I'll, you know, find something on Etsy or whatever. And a lot of it, actually, one of the weird things about it is I, as the man, always just dressed in black and this and that, whatever. I, as a human being, wear some weird ass stuff. So so for me, I like, if I'm coming back, if I'm going to be different than the man, then I want to look the exact opposite. So what is the opposite of the man? It's over the top. The man is understated. She's all black. What's this next evolution? It's the opposite. It's over the top. It's brash. It's big. It's in your face. And so I worked from there. And then just Kobe is he's in a league of his own with his suit.
Yes. I love that you're calling him Colby. People are probably like, who's that?
Oh, sorry, Seth. Yes.
No, that's all right. That's all right. I've told this story before. I had Seth on when Dean Ambrose left WWE, and we kept and at the time Seth was defending WWE, and we kept calling him Dean Ambrose, and people thought like Seth and I had planned this out and it was like some sort of like work because we weren't referring to him as John Moxley. So like when someone drops real, I always like to clarify the real name from the wrestling name because people then accuse you of like, you know, doing something weird. Yes. So have you, now I would imagine with you and Seth, there's no such thing as too much when it comes to the drip, but have you ever said to him like, that's too much or maybe let's not, because it seems like the more outrageous, the better.
No. It's always like, that's great. You know, that's great. That's ridiculous. It's great. That's what wrestling is though, man. It's fun.
Of course. It's
outlandish. It's, that's what it should be. You know,
how long does it take you to like find the out? Like, how much time do you spend looking for outfits?
Honest to God, not that much. Not that much. Yeah. Either Troy, like I said, Troy will do it. Troy is the man. So he'll either get it for us, or I'll see something online, you know, if I'm scrolling,
Anytime WWE is at MSG, it's a big deal. So like that night, we got to step it up to another level. And
100%. That was my thoughts. I was like, and it's contract signing, right? So contract signing, right. I need to come out looking the business.
Tell me what it was like for you. I think it was the first SmackDown that aired on Fox, and The Rock came back, and you got to do the opening with The Rock and Baron Corbin. What was that like being in the ring with, I have a slight, you might want to say like single white female obsession with The Rock, so I'm going to try to about it. But so tell me what that was like for you.
He's great. He's just so great. Like, you look at him and he's the biggest movie star in the world, and he's got a million different irons in the fire, but he still keeps his ear to the ground, and he knows what's going on, and he wants to help us, and he'll always offer his advice and be kind. And he came back and he wanted to help elevate me with that. And so, you know, he doesn't need to do that, but he does. And just what an incredible way to be as a human being, you know. It's just, it's mind blown. So much respect for him.
And not a surprise at all, but I mean, you hung with him, went toe for toe. I mean, the segment was great. What is that like when you're done with that and you get backstage? Is that like a huge adrenaline rush?
Well, I had to go to have a match after that, you know.
Oh, okay.
But like, after, you're just standing there shaking, going, "Holy crap, what just happened?" And you know, like the crowd, it's electrifying, you know, when he comes out. Yeah. So, being able to witness all of that and stand in it and experience it, and you go, "Whoa, I want this every time."
Right. So for you, you know, like we mentioned, we have Survivor Series. There's a huge WrestleMania next year, WrestleMania 38 in Dallas, Texas, Jerry World over two nights. Tickets go on sale actually this Friday through SeatGeek. What is the ultimate goal for Becky Lynch when it comes to WWE? Is it just be the champion? Is it be headline WrestleMania? Is it, what's the ultimate goal?
It once was headline WrestleMania, right? And so, but I've done that, and so it's always, you always want to headline WrestleMania, but you just want to make it better, you know. I think if you love this, that's all you want to do, is you want to make it better. And sometimes you're at an opposing viewpoint with creative or whoever it is. And you always just are trying to make it better. How do we make this good? What's the next story? How do we make that good? How can we help this person? How can we help that person? And I think that's it, right? It's how do we make this the best thing on TV? That's always the goal. And sometimes we come up short on that. But this is our art. This is what we love. We love it more than anything. And we just want it to be good. And we want other people to love it as much as we do. And so we go out there and we put our hearts and our souls and every little bit of us into making whatever it is. And sometimes it's not great, but we're trying and we do whatever we can. Just how do we make this as good as we possibly can? How do we make people care? And how do we make the next generation even better? How do we make the magic that we all grew up loving? How do we make that for the next generation? And what's this industry going to be like? So essentially, I suppose, long-winded way of saying, just leave it better than you found it, really.
Right. Whenever I have a WWE person on, especially for the first time, this is your first appearance with it, I always ask them for a Vince story. Because there's just, you know, Vince, if you follow wrestling, you follow it, you know Vince is the ultimate character. I didn't give you time. I'm putting you on the spot, but is there a Vince story, anything maybe coming backstage, something, you know, something he said to you, advice, something funny, anything about the quote, what he thinks of the drip?
When Kobe and I did our, when we were together on screen, which was very well received, beforehand, I said to him, I was like, "Oh, I'm worried that I'm just gonna be Seth Rollins' girlfriend." Seth Seth is Becky's boyfriend. so there's that.
That's great.
That's the first thing that came.
That
to
is great.
The top of my head.
So what is your sort of, is philosophy the right word? What's like your mindset on doing an angle or storylines with Seth now as a married couple? Do you think it's better to stay away from that, or what's?
So I think now as heels, it's easier, right? Like right, as good right, guys, right. You know, like I'm the man, and I'm in my own thing, and he's got his own thing, and it was weird. But as like slimy little heels that the two of us are, maybe it's better. But I don't know. I don't think there's any rush to get to that, or there's any need to get that. You know, he's got his own thing going on now with Big E, again, freaking awesome champion, and I got my own thing going on. So if the paths ever do cross, we shall right. see.
Now, obviously, it's a little early to worry about this, but if mommy and daddy are WWE superstars, what happens when your daughter comes to you and says she wants to be a WWE superstar?
Look, so I think that the automated response is, oh God, no, let's hope not. And then I've gone, well, why? Like, why would I say that? Right. You know, and I suppose, you know, we take such a beating and mentally there's a lot that goes into it, you know, like I keep saying it's our art, you know, and it is. And there's something about being a struggling artist, and that life, the indie life, is hard. Yeah. Like obviously we're in a privileged position where we put her in front of the right people, train her at the right place, you know. But it's given us such a good life, and yeah. we love it. But I think sometimes there's so much heartbreak that goes into it, and there's so much mental anguish, you know, that people right. don't see.
There's well, so also much wear and
that people
tear.
Don't see, you know?
Yeah, a lot of wear and tear, just the lifestyle, just the
Yeah. But at the end of the day, I love it, and it's given me yeah. a life that I honestly couldn't have dreamt of. You know, I've got my husband, I've got the thing that I love the most, and now I've got this amazing little baby. So, yeah. So if she wants to do it, I'll let her do whatever she wants to do.
Last thing before we wrap, I know I got to let you go, but you mentioned creative a minute ago, and it just came to me in my head. I had Roman on a couple of months. I had Roman on after he did that promo where he said John Cena was like the missionary position. And right. I asked him if he gotten any, you know, because they cut it out of the YouTube or whatever. And he told me he's unscripted when he does promos. What about you?
So I am given a lot of freedom, and then sometimes told, you have to say this. So, right. So there's a lot of freedom, and then there's sometimes lines where I have to say them whether I like it or not. So, right. But you know, you just try and make it work. But for the most part, I'm sitting down and I'm thinking about it and writing up what I want to say.
So we've got Survivor Series, November 21st, 8 o'clock on Peacock, Becky against Charlotte Flair. She's already made her feeling. So will we see a promo here that maybe on SmackDown this Friday where you have a lot of freedom and there's going to be some interesting things said about Ms. Flair?
I haven't been told that I'm going to SmackDown. Which of course
you're on Raw. That's right. You're on Raw. I'm so used to SmackDown. You're on Raw. My bad. So on Raw. On Raw on Monday, I should say.
Perhaps, but also I just got a new number one contender in Liv Morgan. And honestly, I'd rather address her. She's my number one contender. I haven't really faced her years ago, but she was in a different position there. I was in a different position there. And so I think my attention might be drawn to her, somebody who's worth my attention, you know.
Love it. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. Good luck at Survivor Series and best of luck with the baby. Tell Seth I said hello, and hopefully we'll do this again down the road.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks. All right. Joining me now, he's been on many times, and really a perfect week to have this guest because the NFL has sort of completely gone to hell. And he is Kevin Clark from The Ringer, host of Slow Newsday podcast, writing, does it all over there at The Ringer. And he once again joins the SI Media podcast. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. We were just talking. I can't believe the season's halfway over. Like, I know that's the kind of thing you say almost like when you talk about the weather or whatever with another journalist, but like, it is unbelievable how quickly it's flown by.
It is amazing. And, you know, we'll have the Thanksgiving games before you know it.
Yeah.
Bears, yeah, Lions, and CBS getting lucky that the Raiders are decent, because they'll Raiders, Cowboys will be the most watched game of the season. And I think the night game is Bill Saints, which is pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. I mean, we'll have to suffer through the Lions and the Bears, but it's worth it. That's a tax you pay.
That's when you got to spend the time with the family. Yeah. That's spend some time with the family and then blow them off at 4:25 on the Raiders.
That's right. Yeah. The Raiders Cowboys game is going to be, that's going to be one of those games where it's like going to be like a 5-year high.
Yes. And that's, I think
those
so.
Those are two
sure.
extremely popular teams. It's going to be unbelievable.
Absolutely. So there's a ton of NFL topics to go through, which we will do. Before we get to the NFL topics, I have to say, though, I'm a little jealous and have a little bit of an issue with you, because, as I mentioned, you host Slow News Day.
Mm-hmm.
You had Jim Nance on. Jim has been on this podcast 2 or 3 times. I never got a quarter zip from Nance. You got one from Jim Nance?
I got one, and I got a polo.
I'm jealous.
I got a polo, and I got a thank you note that's actually still on this desk somewhere.
Tell my listeners why you got sent a quarter zip from Jim Nance.
So I asked Jim Nance about, because we filmed in October, and I said, Jim, it's getting colder. We're going out of t-shirts. We're getting into quarter zip sweater season. And he went on 3 or 4 minute sort of deep dive into all of the great ways to wear a quarter zip. I owned one quarter zip before this, and he actually made fun of the zipper, said the zipper was too bright. Like, he was so in, like, he just totally got it. You can see why Jim Nance is as good as he is on television, is because it was the moment that I wanted to go somewhere, he was just there with me. He was just there with me. It was funny. It was great. And then, so Corey McConnell, my producer, was like, why don't we make a trailer for the episode? Which oftentimes we do, because if the episode's longer than 10 minutes, we can't put the whole thing on Twitter. We have to put it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And so this episode's going to be longer than 10 minutes. Why don't we take the quarter zip part, put some bells and whistles on it, add some music, act like it's the biggest thing in the world. And then it's very funny video. I ended up getting like 300,000 views on Twitter. Just on Twitter in that afternoon. Like, it went totally bonkers. Everybody loved it. And so that wasn't even my idea. It was Corey McConnell's idea. And so Jim, I guess, was excited about that. They ended up sending me some stuff. It fits great. I got to tell you, Jimmy, it fits great. It is a good, good, good quarter zip.
I'm not a quarter zip guy,
but now I am.
I love that story, and I hope more people understand, because the couple of times he's been here, he's been great. But Nance is a character; he really is.
He really is, and all those guys, and so we've had Joe Buck on as well, and it's like the thing you don't understand, I would say, and you certainly understand it, is that the rigors and sort of rigidity, I guess you could say, of broadcast television at 4:25 when 30 million people are watching. Puts you in a little bit of a box, and you can't exactly do a tight 5 stand-up routine there. And you can't go on a long rant. I mean, I remember talking to Marv Albert about this years ago, where he was saying, like, you know, the way football is so fast paced now, you can barely tell an anecdote now. You know, you used to be able to sit there, and now with no huddle and things are happening between the snap and everything's so programmed, it's just so different. And so the personalities of those guys, I would say all of them, don't really come through. And that's why I think it's fun to have them on a Slow News Day or a podcast or whatever, and just let them chop it up.
Yeah. Speaking of personalities, just, we'll get to some football talk. What are you like a guy who's all in on the Manning cast? Are you watching that every time they're on? Yeah.
I love it. I love it. It's one of my favorite things in sports media right now. I had a realization a couple of weeks ago, which is, I don't actually remember anything that's happened in the games unless it's through the prism of the Manning cast, right? So, like, I remember vividly Drew Brees kind of mumbling, what are you doing, when Jameis Winston can't run the offense in the same way that Brees could a year ago, right? So that, to me, is what stands out. I think from a football standpoint, it's overshadowed the football in a good way. I mean, some of these games are not – I mean, if this was Chiefs-Ravens and – just 1 minute left, and I desperately wanted to watch what the Chiefs defense was going to do, maybe the Manning cast is in for me. But if it's the second quarter and it's Saints Seahawks, this is what you want. And, you know, Brian Curtis and I did a podcast about this a couple weeks ago. And, you know, he had said, is this kind of the future? And I said, I think it's, I use the term black swan event, which means, you know, one out of a trillion, because the Mannings are uniquely equipped to it, to do it. And I think that there's going to be attempts to do it. I think, you know, I asked Jim Nantz about this. Somebody like a Phil Mickelson could probably do this, because he has that type of personality. He could just sit in his basement and do this and get famous people on the phone, get Barkley and those guys. But I don't think networks should learn the wrong lessons from it. And I still think that you don't have to go full broadcast or full Manning cast. You can combine those two in a pretty smart way. It just takes some forward thinking.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think it's going to lead to a lot more alternative telecasts, which is what ESPN calls it. I don't even necessarily know if it's going to lead to what we see with, you know, two people guessed. It could be anything, but I think you're going to see a lot more alternative telecasts.
For sure. And the thing is, and this is something I've talked about with a couple people over the past couple months, like the reason the NFL gets 60 million people to watch the AFC and NFC championship game, it's not because of me and you. It's because of my parents.
Right.
Who barely know what's going on. My mom can name 10 NFL players, and she actually needs a little more of, like, it's an 8-yard game that'll bring up second and two. The Chiefs have really struggled to move the ball tonight. Like that's actually what my mom needs.
I've always said I hate the Super Bowl, because the Super Bowl is not for me. The Super Bowl is for the fringe fan. Like, for me, the football season ends as a football fan for the AFC and NFC title games. Their Super Bowl is nothing resembling what an NFL fan knows as a – that is for the fringe fan.
Right. And and the fringe fan is why the NFL is going to make $25 billion a year in 5 years or whenever that's going to hit. It's not because of us. And so I don't think that that's – I think that the NFL and the decision making will realize that a little bit. And again, that doesn't mean anything other than combine the best parts of the Manning cast with the best parts of traditional broadcast and go from there.
Right. You know, I wanted to touch on a bunch of NFL topics since we're talking about the success of the. I was going to start with Rodgers, but I'm going to start with the taunting since you talked about the success of the NFL. I just want to say one thing about the taunt. I despise it. I'm with everybody else. I think it's ridiculous. I think I can't say enough bad things about it. That was taunting on Monday night by what the rule is. So as much as I want to rip every taunting call, I can't rip that one if the guy looks at the sideline and is staring at them. Having said that, I've seen people say, like, the taunting is ruining the NFL. 25 million people watch Jordan Love against the Chiefs on Sunday afternoon. The NFL is just fine, even with this crappy rule. I mean, let's relax on hurting the NFL. It's not hurting the NFL.
I agree with that part. What I'll say is that what I don't like is more subjective things giving the referees the ability to swing the game. Right. And that, to me, is what concerns me from just somebody who enjoys the sport. I don't have an NFL team. Unless the University of Miami or the Orlando Magic join the NFL, I got no rooting interest in any of this stuff, okay? I'm viewing it just as an analyst, just as a writer, just as a reporter. But I hate the idea that the other night, Cassius Marsh kind of looking over and posturing towards the Steelers bench, which no one even noticed, cost them 3 points. That to me is crazy in a pretty important game, right? And by the way, I'm not talking about, it's not even just the Bears win or lose. You know, there's 10 assistants there whose jobs are on the line. There's a head coach who's going to be fine, but his job is on the line. A GM and jobs on the line. And the more you know in this, you know, the more people you know in this business, the more you realize when the head coach or the GM gets fired, it's not just two guys who make $4 million a year getting fired. It's a bunch of analysts who make $35,000 who have to tell their family. So, I mean, I take this stuff very seriously from that sort of competitive aspect. And so giving the referees more power to swing the game based on things that are by nature almost always borderline is a horrible idea. That to me is what is, I think, what you need to consider. If you want to get taunting out, start finding these guys after the fact. Fine. I mean, like the thing that drove me crazy a couple of years ago is when college passed this rule, and I don't even know if they changed it, but it's barely enforced anymore. That if you, I haven't seen it enforced in eons, but if you are a taunt during the touchdown run, that the touchdown comes off the board.
That happened this year. Happened a couple of weeks ago.
Okay. I missed it.
Iowa State is who it happened to.
Okay. So, but that's a good example of like something that just gets enforced when they want it to, right? Just gets enforced when they want it to. And the more power you give referees, and this isn't about, I mean, maybe it should be about gambling and all that stuff because they need to be vigilant, you know, the, right. Everything is legal now, all that stuff. But I'm putting that aside. The more you give, you put everything in a gray area, the more competitive aspects will be affected. And at the NFL, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
And I'm sorry. So coaches are obsessed with this idea. I hear it all the time. One of the reasons Ron Rivera told me that they shouldn't have tablets on the sideline with live footage and all that stuff is because he goes, he works so hard during the week that he doesn't want anything external to ever influence a win and a loss on a Sunday. Right.
Right.
Well, I got to tell you, technology is far, 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 far less important as far as winning and losing on a Sunday than the ability for a referee to throw a 15-yard flag literally whenever he wants. I mean, almost everything could be taunting in the same way that everything could be holding, right? Everything right. could be defensive holding, offensive holding, whatever it is.
Well, I would push back on that only from this standpoint, because I can't stress enough, I hate it too. I wish they never did it. But Joe Buck came on this podcast before the season, and you know the crews for each network usually have meetings with the officials before the season starts. Uh-huh. And I asked Joe, I said, is this season going to be marred by this taunting stuff? He goes, here's the deal. They're only going to call it if the player is looking directly at another player. If the guy's turned sideways, they're not going to call it. Schrager was on Good Morning Football this morning, or Tuesday morning, I think, said the same thing. Like, everyone knows in the league, you can't look at – it's where you're – basically, your head is going where you're looking. This guy turned to the whole sideline, so
– I know. He wasn't looking at anybody in particular. He was looking at a bench.
Well, he's taunting all of them.
I think that's a gray area.
And I also think, you know, if they want to crack down on it, I don't agree with it. I wish they didn't. Maybe, like, can we make it like a 5-yard penalty? Does it have to be 15? Invent something new. Make it a 7-yard penalty. I don't know.
Or just find these guys $10,000 after the fact, and they'll it'll go away. Yeah.
I hate the competitive
aspect of it. Is infuriating to me, and that's why I just couldn't imagine a game swinging on that. And that's what
let me ask you this though: what bothers you more, the taunting penalties or the roughing the passer?
Well, the roughing the passer is in service of something, right? Which is that a couple of years ago, and it's always been trending this way, but a couple of years ago, quarterbacks kept getting hurt. And don't look at the stats, the ratings between Jordan Love replacing Aaron Rodgers and Mahomes, because those were through the roof inexplicably. And part of that was because I think people, A, wanted to see Mahomes, but B, people wanted to see how Jordan Love would
Trainer
play.
Factor.
And, yeah. And also there was so much talk about Rodgers during the week. People were just thinking about this game, all that stuff. Okay, let's put that aside. Quarterbacks are the reason people watch the sport. Quarterbacks are, I mean, I think I haven't looked it up recently, but I think the highest rated AFC championship game ever was the last Manning versus Brady AFC title game in January 2016. There's a reason for that. And I think that when Aaron Rodgers gets hurt and Scott Tolzien comes in, that is not something that Roger Goodell wants. That is not something that Brian Roloff wants. And so I think that they do everything to keep those guys upright. I think that they're overprotected in a lot of ways. But I don't think that I get that more than the taunting. No, let me tell you something. And let's be as cynical as possible. This is all about television. This is all about the television money. This is all about revenue. Okay. It costs the NFL a lot more in the grand scheme of things to have a bunch of quarterbacks out than it does the 15 people who will literally turn it off if Tyreek Hill, puts up the peace sign to a defensive back. Okay.
Right.
That is the bottom line right there.
Right. My only pushback on that would be I've seen much worse roughing the passer calls than the taunt. Like every taunting call I've seen, while ridiculous, does sort of hold up to the rule about looking at another player. Whereas roughing the passer, I don't know. The Aaron Donald one on Sunday night, I'm still trying to figure out what the hell happened there. And the only other thing I would say, I don't want to get into a whole thing. Your point about people watch for the quarterbacks, obviously true, but we're in a day and age now where more people might be watching for the gambling. Like the cover was in play the entire time with Jordan Love against the Chiefs. The entire time it was Chiefs -7. The cover was in play the whole time. So yes, you're losing people. You're losing that fringe fan who wants to see Aaron Rodgers. You're getting the degenerate who has the Chiefs +7. So it's a different time, I think, where, and I mean, listen, that could be, you touched on it a little bit with the gambling boom Yeah, you really got to be careful with these. You know, I mean, there's a whole, you know, JFK conspiracy about Kennedy sticking his ass out and bumping, yeah, you know, the guy in the Bears. So, you know, it's not pretty for the NFL all around.
I agree. I just think the more of a gray area you can remove from the sport, the better. And that's why I think that judgment calls like that, that can swing a game that have nothing to do with what's going on the field, you got to remove it if you can.
Yeah. I don't want to rehash Rodgers and get into vax, not vax and all that stuff. It's all been played out. I just, there's a couple of, I'll start with yesterday and then I'll go to one thing from Friday. You know, it's funny to me, I've seen many, many headlines across the World Wide Web. Mm-hmm. Rodgers apologizes. He didn't apologize. He said he took responsibility. And I thought it was fascinating. He tried to do another wordplay semantics type of thing and everyone fell for it again. Am I crazy on that?
I just did a slow news day with Ian Rappaport and I had a New York Daily News and the headline in the New York Daily News, I don't know if you saw it, was I'm sorry, parentheses, in a way.
Okay, and good.
I get it, but like, I mean, you know, again, it implicated, it implied that that Rodgers had come out and kind of had a mea culpa, which I agree with you, he did not. He just basically wanted to say, I think he was surprised at the blowback. I couldn't believe, Jimmy.
Well,
that, go ahead.
I would say that I just want to be on record because I know some asshole's going to tell me, I really don't care if he apologizes. I don't need an apology from Aaron Rodgers. And I actually appreciate the fact that he's not. I don't like when he meant every word he said Friday. So I don't need him to give me the phony apology. I don't care if he apologizes. I'm just talking about the coverage of it. I would never say he apologized when he said I took it. That's my only take there. Go ahead.
I agree. I can't believe that he was surprised by the blowback to his comments. And it was weird because he framed it as, I know there's going to be blowback. And then he got blowback. And then he came back on Pat McAfee. And then there was a People story saying that he was surprised at the reaction to it. So I don't know that now. And listen, I've interviewed Aaron a handful of times. I'm not close to them or anything like that. But I know him as just a person who I've sat down with before. And I consider him to be one of the savviest athletes. He says exactly what he means at all times. I mean, this is not new ground. Everybody said this. He's very well thought, everything he does is thought out, very well thought out. And there are no mistakes that he makes as far as what he says at a press conference, who he's twisting the knife on, whatever. And so maybe at the beginning of that press conference or at the beginning of the McAfee thing, he was trying to set himself up like, oh, I know I'm going to get blowback, and maybe he's trying to lessen the blowback, but man, like I'm just really surprised that he didn't realize the temperature of what that was going to look like all weekend.
Yeah. I said on Twitter after the Monday interview, I don't know if it was his agent or the Packers, but someone told him to tone it down, obviously. Yes. And this goes back to my other point about it, which is off the Friday thing, which is, I mean, you've said it so well, but my take on the Friday thing, which I said to people again, I don't care if he's vaxxed, not vaxxed. He's not coming in my house, so it doesn't really, you know, that's a whole separate thing.
I interviewed him.
Okay, so you should be worried.
My wife was not thrilled, to be honest.
Really?
Only in this sense. And again, I try. Our whole thing is like, you know, in New York, you check vaccination status, all that stuff. I went to a Ranger game a couple weeks ago. You check it at the door. And then, you know, it turns out I had spent extended time with one person who was unvaccinated, and it turned out to be Aaron Rodgers. Just an unexpected twist. That's all.
I heard from a reporter as well who had time with him that was like, what the hell? my thing about the Friday thing is this. Forget the vaccination stuff. He's made it clear for a long time, like he hates the media, doesn't trust the media, and that's fine. Why are you always giving the media fodder?
Yeah,
like I don't understand.
I don't think he hates the media.
Oh, I think he definitely hates the media. You don't think he hates the media? I'm surprised.
I think he knows how to work the media. I think you see these stories. I think he said it on Le Batard and other places that he records certain interviews just to make sure that no one takes it out of context. I think he likes it. I think the guys who, there's that fine, fine, fine line, Jimmy, between hatred of the media and sort of hating what the media can be. I think he hates the aggregation part of it. He hates the clickbait part of it. He hates, you know, okay, I told a beat writer this, and now a third hand blog is twisting it and making that headline. That's what he hates. But I think he's addicted to giving them content. And if he wanted to stop, he would. Kind of like what I was
saying. That is my point right there. That he, you said it yourself, smart guy, knows how to work the media. So you can't tell me you're going to come on the McAfee show Friday, rant about woke culture and PC culture, and then expect what? No headlines? I mean, come on.
He did that with me. He actually said with me in August, he said that the office wouldn't be made today because of PC.
A lot of people have that. Yeah, yeah.
The office is still one of the most popular shows on the planet. Like, I know what he was trying to say, but I don't necessarily agree with
him. Right. Well, I wrote a column 2 weeks ago when the Packers played the Bears and he had the rushing touchdown and said, I own you. Everyone across the board loved that moment. There was nothing but praise for that moment outside of maybe Bears fans. Mm-hmm. And then he went to McAfee that week and McAfee asked him about it. And he said something like, woke culture is trying to get me. Who was trying to get you? Everyone loved that moment. What are you talking about? It made no sense. I feel maybe, I mean, yeah, he must like the little game here with the media because he's always throwing gas on the fire, it seems like.
I think he likes it. Yes, the game. The game is the perfect phrase to use. Is he likes what? This is the unifying theory. He wants to be in the media on his terms.
Right.
That's why he gives these press conferences. That's why he goes. That's why he goes to certain media outlets. And that's not, I've talked to him a handful of times. McAfee obviously has him every single week. He talks to the beat writers in Green Bay they have actually a pretty good relationship from what I've seen firsthand when I go there and he's giving people time and stuff like that. He's trying to kind of flood the zone with his content. But I'd also say, and this is not the only quarterback like this, he argues balls and strikes. And he'll say, hey, I didn't actually say this, even though he went up either right at the edge of it or he implied it heavily or whatever. He knows, again, exactly what he's doing. So then he has an out a lot of times with this thing. Again, not the only quarterback who does that. Not the only coaches do it. GMs do it, whatever. It's common in football. But he wants a firm control over everything he says.
Yeah. Again, you don't like the blogs, you don't like the aggregation, you don't like the clickbait, but you go on McAfee every week for an hour. Right. Well, what do you expect is going to happen? I will say in his defense, now hopefully he didn't take it seriously and he found it funny. The best thing of this whole thing since Friday by far was the Daily Mail claiming he was in California with these pictures of a random dude who did not look like Aaron Rodgers.
Could you imagine being that guy? And then Aaron Rodgers' girlfriend or fiance is on Instagram just destroying you, saying you have small feet, saying you have a terrible car, a Kia. This guy's just trying to get in his Kia and go get coffee.
Live his life.
He's getting destroyed by the internet.
Unbelievable. All because the Daily Mail said that was Aaron. Like, he's good. I mean, listen, clearly Aaron Rodgers was fast and loose with some of the protocols. He's not flying to California. Well, yeah, I mean, it's just, oh my God, that was quite a layer to add to the story. Another thing I want to get into here, I feel like it's completely flown under the radar, but my God, Bill Belichick, the fact that he has that team where he has them already. And no one's talking about it. They're flying on, one of the nice things about this season is it is wide open. There is no dominating team. So everyone's sort of in the mix. That guy, it's not even, you can't even comprehend what a good coach he is. He's so far and above everyone else. You could take your John Harbaughs, your Mike Tomlins. There's no one even remotely close to the level of Bill Belichick, and he's shown it this season. Last year was all about Brady, and rightfully so. And Brady may win another one. He's still playing out of it. But the narrative that Bill needed Brady, I'm not saying the Patriots are going to win a Super Bowl, but can we put that to bed too right now?
All right. So what's interesting to me is that I saw this coming a little bit in this regard. Last year, tons of opt-outs with the Patriots. It was interesting to me. I think Breer made this point before last season when all these guys were opting out. But it's like most of the Patriots who opted out were older. They'd won rings before. They had a bunch of money in the bank. And they're just saying, you know what? I'll see you guys next year. Right. And I think that I think it was Matt Light. It was a former offensive lineman for the Patriots who said that Belichick viewed the 2020 season as a joke. And what everybody means by that, and I believe that, which is that he wasn't able to practice, wasn't able to have a real training camp. It was abbreviated. You could barely hit. Even if you could hit, you didn't want to because, you know, you have so many guys out due to certain protocol stuff, whatever, that you don't want to pick up any injuries. I mean, it was just a nightmare last year. And to be a football, let me back up here. That is 9 millionth on the list of worldwide concerns. It was a tough year to be a football coach. I just want to get that out there on record.
Yeah.
But if you were a football coach, last year was the hardest year you've ever had, right?
Right.
And for a guy like Bill Belichick, situational football, game plans week to week, finds edges in the little things. You don't have the biggest advantage. Tom Brady was the number one advantage the Patriots already always had. The number two advantage was Bill Belichick. They've got that back. So they've got the opt-ins this year, the guys who were out last year, and they've got Bill Belichick back, right? The Bill Belichick in the truest sense, game planning, understanding. You almost feel bad for Cam Newton because, you know, I think if there was a more normal year last year, things would have been a little better and the Belichick-McDaniels operation would have been a little more smooth. But I have so much respect for Bill Belichick's ability here to create something out of nothing. And it was funny because we just did a podcast this morning. We do a gimmick every year called How Many Teams Can Win the Super Bowl. And it's a good exercise because we just went, hey, can 5 teams win it? Can 15 win it? And the two guys that were on with me, one of them is my colleague, one of them works for Football Focus. They had 5 teams in the entire NFL. And I said, no. This is wide open. There's about 12 teams, including the New England Patriots, who conceivably have a path to the Super Bowl. And I think that we're looking at some of these incomplete teams. The Patriots are one of them. The Chargers are one of them. The Titans. And we're saying, oh, there's no way they can win it. Look at their defense or look at their lack of running game or look at the whatever. Look at their coaching staff, whatever it is. We're looking at these things. I'm saying, okay, fine. In some years, that would be disqualifying. Not this year. Everybody's super flawed, a lot of weird results. To paint the season with a broad brush, Jimmy, and say, all right, this team's out of it. If you're winning games right now, you're officially in it. There is no qualifications on that whatsoever.
I did have a problem, though, when David Carr tweeted about his brother. I mean, it was an inappropriate tweet at the Rexy, but he said, like, when the Raiders win their Super Bowl.
Win the Super Bowl.
That one might be a stretch.
I will say this. That was a hugely inappropriate tweet. He deleted it and all that.
Yeah.
If anybody doesn't know, it was basically after Henry Ruggs was arrested, David Carr said when Derek Carr wins the Super Bowl, he will not only be the most valuable player of the year, he'll be one of the most valuable players ever. I don't even think he said one of them. I think he said the most valuable player.
I
will say this. If they did win the Super Bowl after all of this, David Carr would have a leg to stand on if they did win the Super Bowl. But I also think that it overshadowed, you know, there's a way to present that. Derek Carr is playing out of his mind. He's great. He really has helped that franchise overcome the Gruden stuff. We'll see. I mean, obviously the Ruggs stuff is horrific, as is the Gruden stuff. But going forward, I mean, yes, Derek Carr is hugely valuable on that team. David Carr just overstated it to the point that he hurt his own case. Right.
And they're in the mix. Like you said, everyone's in the mix. One last thing on Bill. Did we ever find out why one sweatpant leg was rolled up?
I just... I don't know. I don't know. So if anybody hasn't seen it, there's the footage of Bill Belichick walking in on Sunday was unbelievable. And there was people were asking, he had a suitcase with him. What's in the suitcase? A different pair of sweatpants? Like what? It's a big suitcase with him.
Pencils and paper. That's what's in there.
Yeah,
probably.
Pencils and paper.
What game plans? He's not using the Microsoft plans. Surface.
Exactly. I don't know. I'm done questioning Belichick's fashion choice.
And when he came into the stadium, he had navy blue sweatpants, but one leg was rolled up. Just one. I could see maybe he was hot, so he rolls both up. No, but
I think it's
one.
Possible. He was just on the bus and he's just getting all out of sorts. I don't know.
Yeah. That was a good
I don't know.
A good podcast host would ask very specific questions that you can answer straight ahead. I'm gonna do the opposite of that and just go broad.
Excellent.
What is going on with the Chiefs?
So, a couple of things.
Will they turn it around?
They will turn it around. Although I think they're going to win a playoff game this year. I think they'll win a playoff game this year. And it's funny because when we were just doing this exercise with my colleagues, they all think that the Chiefs are going to be the best team in the AFC by December. I wouldn't go that far. I would say this. So, the one thing that's not happening is Patrick Mahomes is not looking at cover two, too deep coverage, and saying, I can't do this. Okay. He saw more. So this has been the narrative the last couple of weeks. Teams are putting two safeties back. They're taking away the deep stuff, and now Mahomes can't operate. That is such an oversimplification. I wish – I was actually just talking to a source about this last night in football. I wish things were that easy because I could just say that stuff and it'd sound like a genius or whatever. But as you know, it would actually take about 45 minutes to actually explain why cover two is a little harder on Patrick Mahomes than other things. Having said that, Patrick Mahomes saw more cover two last year than the one safety looks, and he was fine. None of this stuff is, you know, if Patrick Mahomes only faces two safeties for the rest of his career, he should be better. Number one, he's missing throws. He's just missing throws. I don't know if he's hurt. I don't know if it's just bad luck. I don't know if he doesn't have chemistry with his receivers right now in a weird way, even though he's played with Kelce and Hill for so long. Kelce's a step, I don't know if it's a step slower, but he's just not what he has been the last couple of years. They're not beating man coverage in the way that they used to. Mahomes is holding onto the ball longer because of that. And you're seeing what happens. This is what happens. And then beyond that, the defense has always been bad. But when you don't have the best offense in football and the best quarterback in football to be the deodorant for the whole thing, you see them become a mediocre team pretty quickly. So I think it's a combination of Mahomes just off on his throws, which happens. I mean, I was looking at some of the Brady stuff a couple of days ago. There were stretches in 2013, 2014, 2015, where Brady would go five games like this. He'd go five games with a 50% completion percentage, or in some cases going back a little further, I think in 06, which is probably when he was around the same age Mahomes is now, he was under 50% for a couple of games. It just happens. I'm not too worried. It does make it more interesting, the fact that Mahomes is having this struggle. I think everybody kind of penciled him in for being John Wick for the rest of his career. And he's going to figure it out. And then the Chiefs, I think it comes back down to Spagnuolo and that defense and what their talent level is. But I'm not pressing panic with the Chiefs. It's going to be fine. I mean, I'm a little more worried about the Bills losing to the Jaguars last week, but the Chiefs will be fine.
Yeah, I think the Bills have some problems. Last thing before I let you go, we'll wrap it on this. Are you looking forward? ESPN's coming out with this 10-part documentary on Brady, Man in the... I was going to say Man in the Mirror. It's not Man in the Mirror. Man in the Arena. Are we expecting anything? I got to read some screeners. I got some screeners I need to watch, but you think they're going to pull back the curtain here? Should we expect something good?
It's interesting because... So I'm going to watch it. I'm interested to watch it. And I was about to say... It's got to be like The Last Dance, but The Last Dance didn't necessarily peel back the curtain on Jordan. A lot of the stuff in The Last Dance is peeling back the curtain on other people, right? It was a bit of a, you could tell that Jordan had say in what was happening in The Last Dance. The Last Dance was one of the best things that's ever happened in sports media, and I loved it, and it came at the exact right time. Things will be a little different here. Number one is that it's not two decades after the fact. As Last Dance was, it's actually still happening in real time. So you have to, how candid will his comments be? Will he say anything about Belichick? Will he say anything about the way things are run in New England? Anything like that? Will he say anything like that? His teammates? I don't know. That's up to Brady. That's up to the producers and all that stuff. But that to me, is there going to be honesty? And is there going to be anything that we don't necessarily know? Because Brady's interesting. In the sense how, you know, his work ethic, how hard he works. I mean, if you just read Seth Wickersham's book that came out a couple of weeks ago, you learn a lot about that. But I don't need to see more Brady workout tapes in Montana or whatever. I'm all set there. What I need is some true honesty on how he feels about Belichick, how he feels about things now. Teach me something I don't know. There's a lot I don't know. But I'm intrigued to see what he wants to tell us about his career. He's been controlling the whole time. Brady is not the guy in New England press conferences. He never has been. Absolutely. He's only been that because Bill Belichick wanted him to be, and Tom Brady's a good teammate and didn't want to make any fuss, right? We've seen that now. He's making memes. He's got a podcast with Jim Gray. He's not that guy.
That's been a huge, huge theme on this podcast over the whole season is his new personality in New England. And how about Brady not shy about like calling out the league every week, basically about now this week it was about the 17-game schedule, and he didn't love the single digit numbers, which I thought was hilarious. So I like this Tom Brady.
So does he want to, I think he could make a huge statement that he was never that guy. if he comes out in this documentary and just tortures people.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he's ready to do that.
Hard to torture people when you're still playing, though. That's 100%.
And you can't be honest about anything that's going on in Tampa Bay right now.
Right.
And I mean, like, you're still going to play these guys. If you torch, I mean, it doesn't even matter. You never know what's going to happen with the Patriots. Are they going to be good enough to make the Super Bowl in the next 2 years? I don't know. And I'm sure Tom Brady doesn't know either. So I think it's always in the back of his head. I think doing a doc like this on a current athlete is real tough. I don't know if it's ever happened where a current athlete documentary has worked like this.
Well, it comes out next week, so we'll find out soon enough. So the 16th, yeah, I think it comes out.
I'm excited. I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, same here. I appreciate you coming on. This was great. Covered a lot of stuff. What a crazy, crazy season, crazy and a crazy couple of weeks here. So I'm sure we'll have you on maybe during the playoffs or something like that to go through more stuff. So
really appreciate it. Really enjoyed it, Jim. Right. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Kevin. Take it easy. All right. It's time for our weekly Train of Thought segment here on the SI Media Podcast. So I bring in my friend Sal Licata from SNY TV in New York, WFAN Radio in New York. Sal, how's it going?
Great. How about this weather in November on the East Coast? Isn't it insane? Nice. It's like a summer day out. You must be loving it.
I am. It's good times. Speaking of good times, I'm going to start off this segment with a little personal story, and then we'll get into some topics. But because Sal plays a vital role in all this. So if you follow me on Instagram, which, I mean, obviously way more people follow me on Twitter, but Instagram, I like Instagram better because everyone's nicer. As I'll get into in this story. But you follow me on Instagram. So I posted a picture on Friday. I was going into the city Friday late afternoon to see Billy Joel. I was going Friday night to see Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden, first concert since the pandemic. So that was a thing. And I decided to meet up before the concert, a little before the concert, with a friend of mine, coworker Chris Chavez, who Chris is a professional runner, marathoner, has like this unbelievably successful podcast, the Sidious Mag podcast, and he's all about running, and he was running the New York City Marathon, and he had to go to the Javits Center to pick up his, they call it a bib, which is the number you wear when you run the marathon.
Never knew that.
So I said, all right, I'll meet you at Javits while you get your bib, but then we'll go, you know, get coffee, hang out. We end up getting a glass of wine, hung out, and then I'll go to Billy. So he gets his thing and we're walking through Javits and we were talking. I'm like, it would be so funny if I took a picture with the thing. He's like, yeah, take a picture with it. And I went in front of the sign and I had the bib, took the picture, and I posted it on Instagram saying, I can't wait to run Sunday. So like within 5 seconds, someone wrote back and was like, oh, congratulations, best of luck. And I'm like, Chris, like someone believes this is ridiculous. How could anyone... So I'm like, I got to delete this. He's like, no, leave it up for 24 hours, leave it up. And then the nicest comments started pouring in from people who actually thought I was going to. Anyone who knows me knows I physically can't run a marathon. I would never run a marathon. I would never do anything on a Sunday but watch football. How anyone believed this, I will never understand. Okay, then I'm thinking, okay, give these people a break. You know, if they don't know me personally, okay, maybe, you know. Sal, like top three best friend in the world, knows me better than anyone. Sends me a text. I can't believe you're running a marathon. I was never so disappointed in someone in my life. How could you, of all people?
I need to explain myself here. Number one, I'm not often on Instagram, but I happen to, you know, occasionally I'm bored, whatever. I'm trying to tune out my wife. I'm scrolling through the Instagram and I see a picture of you holding up what I now know as a bib and talking about a marathon. Now, I didn't even read that it was a football Sunday. I didn't even know what marathon it is, New York marathon. I just see you standing there, your new svelte-looking you, who's lost probably 100 pounds or more, and I'm like, what the hell is going on here? Now he's running marathons and he doesn't even tell me about it? I mean, this has gotten to a ridiculous level here. And I was going to comment, and then I said, no, I got to text him here because I can't even imagine what is happening. I am hurt that he wouldn't tell me this. So, yes, I fell for it, but I did not read Football Sunday. That might have given away. And I do think you should take it as a compliment that so many people believed it, because if you were asking me a year ago, I'd say there's no chance in hell you'd be running a marathon.
You should still know there's no chance in hell. I took it as an insult that you didn't know me as well as you should. The funny thing is, I had one, I think it was my friend Gennaro, his wife Beth, texted me and said, I knew it was bullshit, but I didn't want to leave a nasty comment because then I look like a bitch. That was her quote to me. So you know, maybe I'm a little harsh on people. I was angry people fell for it. I'm like, how could you possibly? I was expecting the comments to be, oh, you're so funny. Who would ever believe this? Not right. Best of luck. Don't, you know.
The best to me was, and we were talking about it then afterward, and all the texts were flooding in and the comments, was then you told me your dad. Dad got involved. He didn't even know.
I'm like, what is going on with these people? Is it, I can say anything on Instagram and people believe it. That's the difference, though, between Instagram and Twitter. If I put it on Twitter, I would have got ripped to shreds. Like, you know, who the hell do you think you are? And this and that. You put it on Instagram, everyone's like, that's the lesson here. Everyone on Instagram is nice. That's right. The overall. And I will never run a marathon.
I thought I knew you. That's how I felt.
Yeah. I was crushed that you believed it. Crushed. I was like, how did he believe?
I just was so flustered. I didn't even give it thought. I saw it and immediately went into, what the hell has happened to Jimmy? I mean, what has happened to my friend?
Nothing's happened. Yeah. I'm here, not running marathons. That's what's happened. All right. I'm glad we cleared that up. Instagram is fun, though. It's much. You see, you hate Twitter because everyone's so nasty. You should be on Instagram. But you don't get a reaction. You know, it's a different.
It is a different type of thing. And I'm with you. Like, it just seems like there's less followers on there, at least for me. I mean,
Me too. But that's probably why everyone's nice. All right. Let's get into some topics here. The first topic. Well, let's start with Jokic. What did you make of him getting a one-game suspension? Let's start with that.
I mean, I think he should have been suspended. I don't think you could go run into somebody like that. Now, maybe both guys should have been punished or fined. What did Morris get? He got a fine but not a suspension. He should have probably got a suspension. And maybe he should have got a game and Jokic should have got a little bit more. Look, you can't do that. That starts potentially a riot. You cannot run into somebody and tackle them from behind. So that's almost worse than throwing a punch to somebody's face. So I thought it was bad. I thought the one-game suspension was probably a little light for Jokic and what he did.
I was shocked at how many people... I was shocked at how many people thought it was sort of like a tit for tat thing. The Jokic thing to me. Now, listen, Morris started it. Let's be very clear. Morris started it. But in the case of Jokic, when you take steps, like he took like three steps and then delivers the shot while the guy's not looking.
Yeah, it's
that to me is like a next level thing. So I was surprised. I thought it'd be maybe one or two games for Morris and then five games for Jokic.
Right.
But, you know, Barkley came out and said Jokic had every right to defend himself and called it sort of like, you know, retaliation. And, you know, I thought it was going to be a lot more people pounding on Jokic, but I did see a lot of sort of, the other guy started it, which surprised me. And I'm open to listening to that. And I think, okay, I could see that now.
I think it would be fine if it were a normal altercation. Somebody throws an elbow, somebody pushes and shoves, you get into it, even punches are thrown. Okay, that can't happen, but you understand it. In this case, the bigger issue is not that he hit Morris. It's that Morris was running away from him and he ran. To your point, he took steps to go deliver that blow. That was intent to hurt right there. That's bad. Now, I know punches are intended to throw too, but it's different. You get in a scrum. These guys aren't really throwing punches anyway. They're not gonna... That was a vicious blindside attack on Morris where I thought he should have been punished a little bit more harshly.
Another topic here, which I find very amusing. LeSean McCoy has been on Good Morning Football all week. And a couple of years ago, LeSean McCoy went on Twitter like a day before... or 2 days before Avengers Endgame came out, or it's Endgame Avengers, whatever it is. You know I'm not watching those movies.
Yeah.
And spoiled the movie for everyone. He explained on Good Morning Football, he went to like a private screening premiere. So it was before the movie came out. He goes on Twitter and says, I can't believe this guy died. RIP to this guy. And got as crushed on Twitter as I've ever seen anyone, you know, which is saying something. And he went on Good Morning Football on Wednesday and apologized. And instead, it's like one of his biggest regrets in life. Have you ever had something spoiled for you so bad that it still haunts you?
I don't recall, probably not because I don't recall a specific instance, but I do have issues with that. And by the way, the issue with McCoy is less about the actual spoiling of it and more about he knew what he was doing and was, that's a jerk.
Well, he claimed that he did, like he did, it was not an intentional.
I'm not buying that. He saw it earlier than anybody else and he's tweeting about it. Give me a break. You know what you're doing.
No, he went early for his son. It was his son who's into the movies. He took his son asked to see it. He took his son. He's not as big. He's not as big into those movies as his son.
So then why would he go on talking about it? He's looking for attention.
I'll tell you why. Because what he explained was, he said his son was very upset that this character was killed.
Okay. Yeah,
so he was sort of like tweeting about, like, in the vein of his son, really.
Still not buying it. Now, I do not recall, and by the way, Marvel's Endgame, there's been about 1,000 movies since then. Endgame, but there's 1,000 of those, and you can't keep up with them. Right. Anyway, I remember people doing it, and even if I go and say, look, I don't want to know anything about the show, don't tell me. Oh, yeah, but they're not going to give it away, but they give you something that ruins my mentality going in. It drives me up a wall. No, when I say I don't want to hear anything, I don't want to hear anything. Don't tell me your opinion. Don't tell me I'm going to enjoy it. Don't tell me what you think is going to happen with my taking of the movie. I don't want to hear anything. So, yes, I've had it happen endless times, and it is annoying.
We did not discuss this beforehand, but I just remembered a spoiler situation between the two of us. I remember we were both very, very excited for David Letterman's last show.
Okay.
And I remember we both tried to avoid spoilers.
Well, I went to that.
Oh, you went? That's what it, okay. I tried to avoid the spoilers. You went to it. How did you go to his last show?
I had an apartment at the time right above where that show was, and I happened to be there while they were like, I never even knew how to get tickets before. Because matter of fact, you and I have went to plenty of Letterman shows, and it was always through somebody would get you tickets. You take me as the plus one. So I never knew how to actually get tickets on my own. It just so happened that they were filling out papers. Hey, if you want a ticket to the show, potentially put your name and number. They called me the day before. I took off work. I was like, you better believe I'm going to be there. And then I went. So I probably could have spoiled it for you knowing who was there.
I remember going on like a lockdown, so I didn't get any spoilers. So I think I told you, like, do not spoil. Yeah, I think that's what it was.
Right. Okay. So now I could have been like, oh, yeah. I'm not going to give it away, but you're going to really love it. Even that to me would have been spoiling it. No, you want to go in fresh.
Right. I agree 100%. All right. Next topic. Wednesday morning, I see this story. It's on the front page of the New York Post. So, you know, it's a juicy one. A woman soccer player. I don't know from where, not in America. This is outside of the United States. A woman soccer player on some team, I think it was in France, allegedly assaulted a teammate. So the teammate would have less playing time, and then this player could get more playing time. And the second I read this story, I immediately thought of the understudy episode of Seinfeld with Bette Midler, where George barrels over Bette Midler at home plate, and then Jerry's girlfriend's the understudy. She gets to, and I, for me, I think that is a top 10 Seinfeld episode. Where do you stand on I love the understudy. Where do you stand on that?
Agreed. I love it. Oh, boy, I got to go back and watch all these again, and it's been too long.
There's so many. When George barrels up, first of all, George comes to the plate, and Bette Miller goes, outfield in, when George is at the plate. And then George barrels her over. She's unconscious, and Kramer picks her up and holds her, and he starts singing The Wind Beneath My Wings.
Oh, it was great. Oh. No, I love that episode. Now, refresh my memory with it. Kramer was in the Bette Midler camp, right? And he was upset that they took her. Yeah, okay. That
he went like Jerry and George in the hospital room to visit her. He said, I'm running the show now.
He's coming down running with the ice cream or the Italian ices.
Italian ices.
Italian ices.
He makes her the macaroni Midler. Oh, it was such a great episode. The best line in that episode, this is the clip I put in Train of Thoughts, is the best line in that episode is George and Jerry are in a cab with Jerry's girlfriend, who's the understudy, arguing about what, you know, she's like, I wasn't in on this planning. And George is like, there was no planning. What are you talking about planning? And Jerry's like, people are calling me Galooly, because Jeff Galooly was the guy who bashed Nancy Kerrigan. Galooly, Galooly. Oh, so great. So great. another topic I want to discuss, because you're a Mets fan. Why does no one want to work for the? I've never in my life seen it. If you're not in New York, here's what's going on. The Mets have tried to basically, I don't know, I don't want to say they've tried to hire, but they've reportedly had interest in like 50 potential GMs, and they all turned the Mets down. Is this an embarrassment for you as a Mets fan?
Yes. Another one, by the way, which is supposed to change after they had new ownership. So they were, last year, they were supposed to hire a president of baseball operations and then have them hire a GM. They couldn't find a president. They hired a GM. You know what happened with Porter. You know what happened with the GM who took over in the interim with Zach Scott. He got the DUI. They move on from him. Now they're supposed to start again. Hire a president of baseball operations, GM. They can't find anybody. And then Alderson comes out earlier in the week at the GM meeting saying that it's New York. People don't want to handle the pressure of New York. What? You think the Yankees would have an issue filling that job if it opened up? No, it's the Mets. It's the same old story. Mm-hmm. And everybody that they want seems to be, oh, you know what? I'm more complacent in Milwaukee or wherever it is that they want to be, as opposed to taking on the challenge and working with the new owner and Sandy Alderson and being the Mets GM.
I mean, listen, you don't know what's there because so much of it is rumor and speculation. But I would imagine as a Met fan, it's a little embarrassing that you can't find someone to run the team.
If the Met fan is used to it, though. I mean, it's just always something. Think about that. I've never heard of it before. How many times have we in sports just, oh, well, GM opening there or an opening in the front office there? They get hired. With the Mets, they've gone through a list of, to your point, 50 people, and everybody's they declined to interview. Not they didn't get the job. They declined to interview for the job. What? It's New York City. You don't want to work in New York? Are you insane?
Maybe you'll be up for an interview.
I would decline to. I don't want to work with
the Mets. Even you don't want to work with the Mets.
I whip them into shape. No, and it gets me to the point where you start just saying, hey, go. And there are people that actually wanted the job that they don't, like Brian Sabin, who's had success before. See, right. To me, then it's not about the people who are turning them down. It's about them looking in the wrong places. And now the report is that they may hire a guy who's been out of baseball for 4 years who went to be a lawyer. And went to be a lawyer.
I love being friends with a Met fan. It's
not that far-fetched to think that they might reach out to me. At least I've been in sports for the last 10, 20 years. I mean, my God.
Too funny. Too funny. All right, last thing before I let you go. Did you watch episode 3 of Curb on Sunday night?
I did. Well, I don't watch it on Sunday. I watch it after whenever I get a chance during the week.
The latest episode of Curb.
I did. I loved the table scene where they talk about who's going to be a middle, who's going to be an end. I thought that was freaking
fantastic. That right there sums up the genius of that show.
Yeah.
That is it right there. A whole episode on how important the middle seat is at a dinner party. That's all you need to know about how great Curb. And let's be honest, Larry... 100% correct about how stupid toasting is.
Right.
Oh, I don't mind. God, right. I don't mind the toast, like with the person who's like directly. But when everyone's stretching the arms all over the table,
everybody's got to touch the glass.
Really,
and look,
really, just do it to the person across from you and move on with your life. There's no need to go crisscross across the table. So between the toasting and then the importance of the middle seat at a dinner party,
loved it.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, great. It's been a good season so far.
Yeah, definitely. Larry's been very Larry, that's what the best part of the series is. All right, Sal, appreciate it. Hopefully by the time we talk to you next week, the Mets have a GM for you.
Yeah, I wouldn't hold my breath. All right, thank
you. Take it easy. All right, my thanks to Becky Lynch, Kevin Clark, Sal Licata. Big episode. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I enjoyed speaking to all three. Had a lot of fun. If you missed any recent episodes, in the archives, check them out. Al Michaels, the voice of Sunday Night Football, was on last week. Chris Long 2 weeks ago. Steve Levy, Jeff Garland 3 weeks ago. Subscribe to the SI Media Podcast. Leave us an Apple review. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Stay safe and take care.